If you'll open your Bibles to the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, that's where we're going to be tonight. We saw what Paul wrote to a young man about learning to say no to ungodliness, and we're going to see that that's a theme of all those who would follow God. There's a yes and a no to Christianity, and tonight we're going to look at the no. Saying no is one of the hardest things in the world that we have to do. Saying no to that extra dessert this time of year is extremely hard. Saying no to our materialistic culture right here when all the sales are going on and all the after Christmas sales are going to be going on is very hard. Saying no to anything that distracts us from what's most important is difficult. Jesus spoke on one occasion about keeping our word without embellishment. And he said simply this, let your yes be yes, and let your no be no. There's a fundamental principle contained in this admonition by Jesus of saying yes and no. If you say yes to one thing, you automatically say no to something else. Have you ever considered that? When you say yes on your wedding day, you automatically are saying no to every other potential suitor. When faith says yes to God, it must automatically say no to something else. We all know that the easier part of that equation is the yes end. Yes, I'm going to start a diet on January the 1st. Now, that's the easy part. Yes, I will be faithful until death do us part. Lots of people can say yes. Statistics say only about half say no. Yes, I will serve God faithfully all the days of my life. That's the easy part. But the no part of the equation involves the long haul, the long obedience. Lot said yes to God, but he never said a definitive no to the world. And so, he hardly was outside of Sodom and Gomorrah before his wife turned back and in doing so turned into a pillar of salt. And he went up and lived in a cave with his daughters, and there he lost his honor and his self-respect. Demas said yes to God initially, but we read about Demas. He was Paul's partner in the gospel. But he never said no to the world. And so Paul would write to Timothy with regret in 2 Timothy 4:10. And he said, Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me. Now it's easy to say yes. The hard part is saying no. And so tonight I want us to look at what Paul called in his letter to Titus, the grace that we need to say no. What we see here in chapter 11 of Hebrews, the grace or the faith to say no. We read about a family here among many families that are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. And this family learned early on to say no. They passed their faith on to a son who learned to say no. And we read about him in verse 23. Look down in verse 23 of Hebrews chapter 11. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child. And they were not afraid of the king's edict. Remember what the king's edict was? Throw the boys to the crocodiles. Throw them in the Nile. They weren't afraid of that edict. And they refused to comply with that edict. And they refused to sacrifice their child to the whims of the Pharaoh of Egypt. Now, Moses' story began, actually, with the faith of his parents. They were two slaves in Egypt. We wouldn't know who they were except that in Exodus chapter 6, verse 20, it happens to mention their names. Amram and Jochebed were their names. And they were slaves during those dark days of slavery when the Egyptians were forced to make bricks and things were getting worse and worse. And Pharaoh had issued that edict. in order to control the population of the Hebrew people, that all Hebrew babies were to be thrown into the Nile. Now, he wasn't the first murderer of innocents, nor was he the last. Herod murdered the innocents in Bethlehem. Our own dark days, we're living in a period of history that I'm convinced one day we'll look back on shamefully by future generations. We are living through a time when legalized murder of children takes place every day in the cities of our nation. Unborn infants, their lives are snuffed out. You know, the irony of abortion is that in our land, we have laws on the books that prohibit taking the life of endangered species. You can be fined for taking an egg out of an eagle's nest. But humans, doctors, are paid generously if they will take the life of a human. Well, Amram and Jochebed had said yes to God. And when that edict of murder was issued in their land, they had the faith that would enable them to say no. Look in verse 23. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born. You remember the story. They fashioned that basket and had it made so it was watertight. And they put that little 3-month-old baby in the basket and placed him among the reeds in the Nile River and had his older sister watch carefully to see what would happen. Well, Pharaoh's daughter found him. She hired that mother to nurse this Hebrew baby. And isn't it amazing how God always honors faith? They didn't know what was going to happen. They simply knew they weren't going to sacrifice their baby, and they did what they could to preserve his life, and God came through. He blessed them accordingly. Amram and Jochebed instilled a faith in that young child. Later, he went on to be raised in Pharaoh's palaces and be educated by all the scholars of Egypt. He went through the highest universities that Egypt offered in that day. In Acts 7:23, it says, Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and in action. Now, let me just say this, and we've talked about this many times before here in our church family. One of the most vulnerable times in the life of a young person is when they go away to university. When they first step out of the home, freshman year at college, more young Christians lose their faith during their freshman year in college than any other time in their life. And so those formative years in the home are so critically important. I know, as Christian parents, that we work and we did with ours, and many of you are doing that with yours, talk with them, read with them, pray with them. Amram and Jochebed had placed something in the heart of Moses, or he would learn of that, that would cause him to stand strong with the people of God. When the time came for Moses to make his own decision, when Moses knew who he was, when he understood the faith of his own people, even though he had been given every privilege that Egypt could offer and all the riches that were there. Several years ago, Vicki and I went to the exhibit, saw all the contents of King Tut's tomb. It traveled around America, and all the riches that were available that Moses could have had then. If he said yes to God, he would have to say no to a life of luxury and a life of power, a life among the elite in his world. And in saying no to Egypt, he would have to step down from the position of ruler to the position of slave. To become Moses, the man of God, he would have to say no to Moses, the statesman, and Moses, the scholar, and Moses, the power maker. I can't imagine how his parents must have prayed for him during those years as he struggled with that huge temptation. Look in verse 24. and following. It says, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. Not only the faith to say yes, but also the faith in the crisis of the moment, the faith to say no. Look what he said no to. According to the writer of Hebrews, he said no to the pleasures of sin, and those pleasures were many. He said no to the treasures of Egypt, and those treasures were great. And there's a little truth tucked away here in verse 25 that's important, and we can overlook it easily if we're not watching. He said no to the pleasures of sin. Some of your versions read for a season, for a short time. And let me tell you, anything that Satan has to offer is for a short time. Only for a season. Doesn't last long. Satan gives you the good stuff up front, and then the older you get, the worse Satan's gift becomes. It ends in tragedy. It ends in emptiness and ruin and heartache and heartbreak. God gives us a gift up front that we see by faith, and the longer we have it, the more we love it, and the greater it becomes, and the more we appreciate it. And finally, in the end, He gives us the best of all, a home with Him in heaven. Don't forget that Satan's gifts don't last. Only God's last. Jim Elliot, that missionary in South America, had it right when he said, "He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep in order to gain that which he cannot lose." You know, if Moses had chosen all those pleasures of sin for a season, if he had said yes to Egypt and no to God, you think we would even know who he was today? At the very best, his name might be over there, and maybe a handful of archaeologists would see his name scratched up on some of those ruins over there today. We wouldn't even know who he was. And yet today, because he said yes to God and no to Egypt, he is known all over this world. The text says he regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt. Some people read that and say, well, how did he... He wasn't doing that for Christ. He didn't even know who Christ was. And that's true. But that's not what the Hebrew writer is really saying. The Hebrew writer is from a Christian perspective. And he's simply saying Moses was willing to do what all the people of God have been willing to do in every age, and that is take on the same disgrace and suffering that Christ was willing to take on for the sake of following God. Did you know that any suffering or disgrace that you experience, if you stand up for your faith in school and people make fun of you, if you choose to do the honest thing and you lose out because you were honest, any disgrace, any suffering you do, but because you're saying yes to God and no to this world, is suffering for Christ's sake, just like Moses did. This is what Paul was talking about in Colossians 1:24 when he says, "Now I rejoice in what was suffered for you, and I fill up in my flesh what is still lacking in regard to Christ's afflictions." And Paul would late in life write to the Philippian church in Philippians 3:10, and he would say, "I want to know Christ and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in His sufferings." No, he wasn't going to share in the cross and what Jesus went through there. But every time he says yes to God and no to the world, he was sharing in the sufferings of Christ. And he, better than most, knew what that was like after his beatings and shipwrecks and imprisonment and all that he went through. Most of you that are here tonight have a faith that at one point has said yes to Jesus. And the real question that I want to ask is this, is that faith equally strong on the other end of the spectrum? have you been able to consistently say no to this world? You know what made Moses able to do that? I just look back and think, if I were in Moses' shoes, I don't know if I would have had the strength to do what Moses did. If I had had that temptation staring me in the face and I had to step out of the palaces of Egypt into the slave camp of the Hebrews, I don't know whether I honestly don't know what I would have done. I hope I would have had the faith to do what he did. But you know how he did it? He had been taught to see things that nobody else could see. Look in verse 26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. He was looking to the end of the journey. You know, it was the same with Abraham. Look back in verse 10 of chapter 11. It says of Abraham, "For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God." It was true of all these people. That's how all of these people maintained the faith that they did. That's why they all could say yes to God and no to the world. Look in verses 13 and following. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them at a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. They were looking ahead to something beyond this life. And folks, let me tell you, if you are living for immediate gratification, you are going to be sadly disappointed when the end comes. It's only those who have the long view that are going to be able to have the strength to stand at the end. I remember several years ago at one of the Olympics, they were interviewing a group of young people who had been training for the Olympics, and they'd had the doping scandals, and they were interviewing them, asking them about that. And they were just asking some of the young folks, would you be willing to endanger your health for that? And one interviewer asked this question. He said to a whole group that were gathered there, he said, would you be willing to end your life at age 30 if you could be guaranteed a gold medal in the Olympics today? And the vast majority of them said, yes, we would. Short-sighted. They'd be willing for a piece of gold and the honor to cut their life short. And so many people in this world are willing to do just that. They'll take short-term gratification, enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season, and then pay for it later in this life, and then all of eternity. How short-sighted is that? Now, the secret to saying no is right here in Hebrews chapter 12. Look at the next chapter. Chapter 12, down in verse 2. He says there, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of the faith. For the joy set before Him, He endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. That's how you have the faith to say yes to God and no to the world. There's an old song that used to be sung when I was a boy, and the lyrics went like this. I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold. I'd rather be His than have riches untold. And I don't know how the rest of you feel, but I would not give up my salvation in Jesus Christ for anything. I can't even imagine doing that. I fully intend to see Jesus face to face. I fully intend to meet all these men and women that we read of here, heroes of faith, one day when I'm there with God in heaven. And those are the kind of people I want to be with for all of eternity. I wouldn't give up seeing the glory of heaven for anything in this world. And it just blows my mind when I see people who have been Christians for years, who in the latter years of their life will do something stupid and just throw it all away and go after the devil when they've already lived most of their life. How can you do that? Oh my, I wouldn't give up what I have in Jesus Christ for anything that this world has to offer. Some of you, most of you, have already said yes to God. Jesus said you've got to count the cost, and that involves the hard part of saying no. And so tonight we're going to sing a song, and we want to encourage anyone here who's never said yes initially to Jesus. You have the opportunity to do that tonight by obeying Him. If you need to be baptized, we'll gladly assist you. If you're here tonight and you've been saying yes to the wrong master, I hope that you'll leave here tonight resolved to reverse courses and say yes to God and no to the short-term pleasures that Satan has been enticing you with. If you need to come and ask for prayers, we'll be glad to pray for you. If you need to respond tonight, we ask you to do that while we stand and while we sing.